What's up, everybody? Welcome to Mike Dawes Has a Podcast. My name's Mike Dawes, and I do, in fact, have a podcast. Joining me on this journey are the good people at Tonewood Amp. The Tonewood Amp is the amazing guitar gadget that sticks to the back surface of your acoustic guitar and vibrates reverbs, delays, and other loveliness through the sound hole as if by magic. Because why should electric guitar players have all the fun? To find out more about the Tonewood Amp and to get a very special discount, head to MikeDawesHasAPodcast.com and try one out for yourself. This show is all about guitar, guitarists, and the music industry in general. I'm really excited to catch up with some friends who I've met on the road over the years, and I'm honored to share some conversations with some really exciting guests I'll be meeting for the first time. Be sure to follow all the guests on their socials, as well as Tonewood App and myself, by typing things into the internet. And do remember to leave a review of the podcast so we continue making more. Thanks very much, guys. Let's dive right into it. Nathaniel Murphy, welcome to the podcast thing. How are you doing, man? It's nice to see you.
Not too bad. Yourself, mate?
Good. Yeah, yeah. Just locked down here. You've escaped to the States, though. How is it over in Chicago?
It's gone all right. It's a bit all over the place, to be quite honest. It doesn't know what it's doing right now.
So yeah, yeah.
It's the best way I can describe it.
How's it affected your day-to-day?
Not a huge amount. I mean, in terms of my work, obviously not a lot of people know I'm a soccer coach, but that's kind of gone by the wayside at the moment. You can only do it in a certain amount of groups, you know, numbers and all that, but it's done, basically.
So. Totally. Well, that's something I wanted to touch on, man, because, so, we have met. We met once in Chicago, where you're living, yeah. Even though, yeah. You know, your accent is deceptive, and we'll get into that as well, I'm sure. a lot of people, perhaps, might know you more for your Instagram name, which I'm going to completely mess up if I pronounce it. It's like Zeppelin Baranatra. Is that right?
That's one of the more unusual ways I've heard it. It's Zeppelin Bornatro.
Zeppelin Bornatro. Can you explain to the people what that is?
Yeah, it's. I'll apologize in advance because it's ridiculous. So, it's from a while back. It's an old email address that I have, and that was the name of it. It was when Led Zeppelin got together for that one-off gig, and you could only get tickets for it by entering via email. And I'm about 15 at the time, didn't have an email address, so I thought, right, well, you know, I've got to make one to enter it. And instead of me doing NathanielMurphy@AOL.com, I thought, nah, that's too boring. I'll do Zeppelin to show that I love Led Zepp. And then the Bornatro part is actually the name of the village in Ireland that my family's from.
Amazing.
So why I put them two together, and it is far too late to change it. So
yeah, you're pretty far down the Instagram rabbit hole with that name at this point.
Oh, it's outrageous, isn't it? But I mean, it's kind of worked out in a good way, I suppose, you know.
It absolutely has, man. I mean, this is why I'm super stoked to talk to you for this thing, this podcast project with Tonewood Amp, because, you know, it's basically an excuse for me to get to chat to mates and people that I find super interesting. And yeah. And I consider you both, because, you know, I'm talking to a lot of people from continents all over the world. I was just doing the math in my head, and I think so far out of the people that I've interviewed, everyone's been on a different continent, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a really diverse thing, the guitar scene. But I wanted to talk to you because you have this whole separate thing going on where, like I said, you have this alias, which is massive on Instagram. it's ridiculous. It's this Instagram, hundreds of thousands of, just every time I open Instagram, and I'm sure a lot of people listening will attest to this, you pop up with just a different shirt on and a different guitar playing some absolutely crazy thing. And don't get me wrong, there are lots of players doing the whole social media thing. You know, I got my career started with like a YouTube social media thing, right? But the thing that I really wanted to share with the people, and what I think is that it's very rare that, well, it's not very rare, but I think it's worth noting the cases where the people who are blowing up are absolutely freaking sick. And you tick those boxes. There's lots of big guitarists on Instagram, but I just wanted to have people understand that you are like the real deal, man. And we've hung out and you've played in Chicago Music Exchange and stuff. And this guy is a freak on the guitar, and not just finger style, but all the styles. And I wanted to just try and introduce some more people to your music, because I was listening to your album as well. So people who are searching for Zeppelin Bornatro might not be able to find your record. But yeah, you got a record out. Do you want to tell the people about it quickly?
Yeah, so it's called War for the Moment. Just a lot of things. It's just me and the guitar, just all fingerstyle kind of ideas that I had. There's a couple of arrangements on it. There's a Fleetwood Mac one, and there's some Nirvana on there as well. But yeah, I released that probably about 2-3 years ago, so it's probably about time that I did another one, to be quite honest.
Well, I mean, yeah, I did my first album in 2013 and the next one in 2017, so it took a fair bit. And
all right, so you beat me to it. I've got another year left.
Yeah, it's not Chinese Democracy or anything like that. But it's a great record, man, really. Honestly, and that's the thing, is that you're known on Instagram as sort of a, you know, there's an expression, jack of all trades, master of nothing, right? But you appear to be a master of everything, all these different styles. Oh. You know, you've got the Chet Atkins stuff, you've got the gypsy stuff, you know. But it sounds, obviously, listening to the record, that you are a fingerstyle guy at heart, which is another reason that I wanted to talk to you, so we could geek out about our influences and things like this. Because I'm hearing a lot of, like, Preston Reed on this record. Is that, was he a huge influence?
Yeah, huge. Because, I mean, I remember when I first heard Andy McKee, it was probably like early to mid 2000s, when it, you know, kind of when YouTube was kind of first gaining ground in that, and I seen it, and it was obviously mind blown because I'd never seen anything like that on the guitar before. And obviously kind of get down a rabbit hole, and I loved all that kind of stuff. But when I first heard Preston Reed, it was Ladies Night, and you know, I was kind of a blues guitarist, blues kind of rock and roll guitarist, and when I heard Ladies Night, it was kind of the percussion idea, the acoustic, but all, it was bluesy. It had that, you know, that backbeat, that feel to it. And I thought, oh, you know, that was mind blown to me. So I had to learn it. And then I went down a whole Preston Reed kind of, you know, trail for a while, for quite a long time. And he's been a huge influence for me. I mean, Michael Hedges as well. They were probably the main two fingerstyle influences for me, to be quite honest. Hedges and Preston Reed. I remember when I first heard Michael Hedges' Ritual Dance. It was the Live at the Bottom Line recording, and that blew me away. I'd never heard anything like it.
That was funny. I was just talking to Khaki King for an episode of this, and we spoke about her doing Ritual Dance for that movie.
There was this movie she did called
August Rush. She had to. She was telling me this. Well, I mean, people will hear that episode, but just to paraphrase, she basically got drafted in to sort of play the kid's hands, this child actor. But apparently, you know, it was all really sick, I'll let her share the story on the other episode, because it's a fascinating story involving David Crosby and like all kinds of crazy stuff. But that's really interesting. So you discovered the genre through Andy McKee and then worked backwards.
That's probably the best way to describe it. And then obviously there's so many players out there, to be quite honest, like Antoine Dufour, you know, hopefully I'm saying his name right.
But man, as English accent people, like, just saying any kind of French Canadian or French name is horrible. I had a French ex-girlfriend, and it's an insecurity that all people with, like, you know, English UK dialects have.
Well, that's what I mean. Me being from the north, so Dufour, it's Dufour, proper Yorkshire accent, Dufour. But yeah, there's loads, and I mean, yourself as well. Like, I remember watching your Gaultier, and I will say, and not just saying it now because you're on it, I've said it to other people in the past, your arrangement of that song is probably the best arrangement I've heard of any song. Now, bear with me, the reason why is because, I mean, obviously as fingerstyle guitarists, when we're arranging something, it can either go two ways. Either A, we want every single part of the song, or it can be B, you're just on interpretation of the song. And I think you have done the best arrangement of a song where it includes absolutely everything. I will say that for me has always been the benchmark, your arrangement of that song. So I've always wanted to say that.
Oh, damn.
It's frightening.
Thanks, man.
It's frightening how good that is, honestly.
Oh, thanks so much, man. That's really kind of you. I mean, it doesn't include everything.
Well, it's
and I spoke
it's
to
as
Gaultier,
good as you're going to get.
I spoke to Gaultier, and he was like, yeah, there's some stuff missing.
It's as good as you're going to get, put it that way.
Well, that's very kind of you, man. Very kind of you. Well, this is really fun already. But no, well, that's really interesting, and that's a testament to Candy Rat Records as well in that era. Like, for anyone listening that perhaps is a little bit younger, around sort of, you know, when YouTube first started, there was a time where where you could be featured on the front page of YouTube. And what would happen is, you know, if a video got loads of views, it would get featured on the front page for a short amount of time and then just get crazy amounts of views because it would be visible to the whole world. And Candy Rat Records, based out of Madison, Wisconsin, released a few videos with Andy McKee, who is, you know, good friend, amazing guitar player, absolute guitar hero to anyone with an acoustic guitar. And there was a time where three of his videos became the top videos on YouTube as the whole website. And that's just insane to think about. And that then exposed everybody to other players like Antoine Dufour and Don Ross and players like that. And and it was very similar. It sounds like we had a very, very similar start in fingerstyle, but you went to the Preston Reed side and I went to the Pierre Bensusan kind of Celtic fingerstyle kind of side, which is interesting to me because you're Irish, you're half Irish.
Well, technically I'm 100% Irish. I was born in Ireland, all my family still live there. Grew up in England though, so I grew up in Manchester. So born in Ireland, moved to Manchester when I was about a year and a half or two, something like that. Grew up in Manchester. Moved out here in 2012. But I go to Ireland like twice a year to see the family in it. But yeah, how did you get into the acoustic kind of side of things?
Well, I mean, we kind of switched this around a bit. Yeah, I mean, I was a rock metal guy, but my family were really into Pierre Bensusan because my godfather is his designer for his artwork. So I would get like Pierre Bensusan tab books that he designed as like a Christmas present. But at school, I'd be learning like, you know, Guns N' Roses and Dream Theater and stuff. And then I guess those kind of schools combined, and then you throw a bit of Eric Roche in, and you know, the Preston Reed thing totally passed me by, which is really interesting because I think a lot of people that don't know the nuances of fingerstyle can quite easily throw in what I'm doing with Preston Reed, but it's actually totally not that. Like, you know, right, the Preston Reed style has a very distinct kind of sound. And yeah, I wanted to say that your some of the songs on the record, which song was it I was listening to earlier?
It's probably Groove Train, I imagine.
Yes, but there was one other one as well, and one of them that's featured on your Instagram relatively recently. It might have been that one, but because you've got a technique which I never use, which is the sort of the Preston Reed kind of thumpy, fisty hand. I've always tried to teach that to students in the past, and I'm useless at it because my fingers are like these long, you know, weird. I can't condense myself into this kind of thump that he gets, which is amazing. And the guitar on the record, what are you playing on that?
So on that, I'm actually using a couple of different ones. So I've got, it's the first Taylor that I ever bought. I bought it secondhand at Chicago Music Exchange. To be honest, I can't even remember the model of it. It's here somewhere. There's that, and I used two Breedlove guitars as well, because I remember at the time Breedlove sent me a couple of guitars just to check out, and I thought, you know, whilst I have them, might as well make use of them. So I recorded using two of them. Can't even remember the models, to be quite honest. I've got them written down somewhere or pictured somewhere. But yeah, it's primarily, like, I think I've got 13 songs on there or 12, but only two of them Breedlove guitars, the rest are with that Taylor.
Right on. It does sound like a Taylor. I can totally hear that because I started on the Taylor as well.
That was my
first guitar. And shout out to Taylor as well. And you seem to do a lot of videos with that. You got like a master built kind of thing.
I'll have to give a shout out to Taylor. Taylor have been very good to me. So thank you to that. They sent me a 614 CE. It was the first year where the V-Brace came out, that new kind of thing that they were doing. But it was a really comfortable guitar because, I mean, I've never been into too huge of a guitar. I like a huge sound because I used to have like a jumbo guitar and I loved it, but then I kind of went to the smaller body and it made a lot more sense, it was more comfortable, and I could still get, you know, a really good sound out of it. So that's what I use primarily for my acoustic playing. It's a 614 CE. But I do have a Loudon that is absolutely incredible as well. So
shout out to Loudon.
Yeah, and Alistair, he let me borrow a Loudon. I can't remember the model. It's quite
an
impressive
F?
One. It's something 50.
Yeah, but I mean, so the Loudon body shapes, there's the O, which is the big big boy, and then the F is the one that a lot of fingerstyle players like. You know, Thomas yeah. Lee, I believe, plays an F, and I think that it classic might drifting be video is an F.
It's that kind of similar shape, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely incredible. Like, it just sounds like a grand piano. I'll play a couple of strings and it just rings out. It's
they're amazing guitars, and I actually lived in Downpatrick, Northern Ireland, where they're made for like... Well, I say lived. My girlfriend at the time lived there because she was one of the builders. So she might well have built your guitar.
Maybe.
What year did you get it?
I got it, I'd say about 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago.
If it was new then, it's quite possible that my ex kind of built the body, or like put the body together.
Possibly.
Yeah. It's a
small
world,
isn't it? Did she write a name in it? No,
I don't think each member of the team gets to write their name in it. I think that's just a George thing. But but no, they're great guitars and great people, and yeah, they're built in Downpatrick, Northern Ireland. I've never owned one myself, which is crazy because literally all my influences are Loudon players.
Yeah.
You know, Pierre Bensusan, his signature Loudon, obviously the early Andy McKee stuff, those videos were done on a Loudon that I think he borrowed. You know, amazing guitars, Thomas Lieb, Eric Roche, you know, all these guys. So shout out to the Loudon guys in Northern Ireland. They make amazing things. And they just brought out their guitar with Ed Sheeran relatively recently,
a
couple of years ago, which is just insane. I remember I was at the NAMM show and got... were you there that year when they launched the Ed Sheeran model?
Wasn't that just last winter?
I think it was the one before because...
Was it?
Yeah, well, I was not there because I was on tour this year, and it must have been the one before.
Right,
at least there was some kind of like press conference, but they sent out like texts to everybody being like, yo, like come and we got a special thing announcement. I think it might have been one of the mornings, you know, following a big night of partying and hanging, but there was no mention of like what it was because it was a secret. And then everyone found out that Ed Sheeran showed up and rocked up, and everyone was kind of super bummed to miss it because they were all hungover and didn't know what was going
I actually got invited to that, and I couldn't make it.
Yeah.
Would you believe it? My flight, like, I didn't get in time. I was getting in late in the evening. But yeah, because I remember that because that was January last year that they did it. So yeah, you weren't there because you were on tour, right? You were in Alaska or something, weren't you?
Oh, yeah, but there was a thing... Maybe there was an initial announcement and a secondary announcement or something. Maybe I'm getting completely confused. Yeah. But yeah, this one that has just gone. Maybe that was the last NAMM ever. Who knows?
It's looking like it.
I mean, it's probably not happening this next time. That's where I met you, right? We met at Summer NAMM.
Summer NAMM, 2 years ago at least.
Mm.
Yeah, it's got to be 2 years, yeah.
With the Tonewood Amp guys.
Well,
I want to talk to you more about this whole Instagram thing, dude, because it's super fascinating. A lot of the other guys I've been talking to, you know, we don't touch on the kind of social media thing so much.
Yeah.
But you're kind of owning it so much that, and first of all, it's a pleasure to talk to you in landscape. This is the widest angle of Nathaniel Murphy, Zeppelin, Bar and Atra that you've ever seen, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, you can see, like, I've got a light in the corner. This is the hallway. This is the couch here. We've got the TV up there.
Exactly. Now I've been to your place, and I know the secrets of your rig. now, when, you know, guitarists love gear, right? We love to just...
We do.
Get geeky and get all the accessories, and every company under the sun will tell you that you need their gear. And then you look at someone like Nathaniel here with, you know, who's the king of guitar Instagram. Would you like to share your rig just so the people know what they need to do?
Yeah, so I use a cushion. Okay, that's number one, a cushion to put the
brand
amp on.
Yeah.
There's some from Target or Walmart, wherever you want. You know, Bob's Furniture down the road.
Excellent. Shout out.
A big poofy cushion to put on the floor so your amp can go on it so the neighbours won't complain, because that has happened plenty of times in the past.
Because you're in a flat. You're in a flat.
I live in a flat, yeah. So a big cushion for that. That always helps. The amps that I use, you know, it's not like a Dumble or something crazy. I use a Roland Street Cube that I got in Manchester and brought over here with me years ago.
Shout out.
And I use a Fishman acoustic amp as well. So they're the two amps. So I'll prop them on the cushion. I'll use a candle to prop my phone up to.
Okay, well, so the candle is on or off? It's lit or
depends. If it's like a cloudy day outside, I'll turn it on, you know.
Okay.
And I'll lean the phone up against that. You know, I usually go for the Yankee candle because they're quite robust, you know.
Okay,
not
so
fall back anywhere.
But do you think the Yankee candle provides better tone in some capacity?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Very resonant as well, yeah. You know. I also use a couple of books to prop up the phone against the candle, or a couple of pedals to create a cable valley for the microphone to go into the into the phone. People are going to think this is a piss take. They think I'm winding them up. It's not. But yeah, that's what I basically use. I mean, I've actually progressed now. I've got a gooseneck that I can use, you know, to hold the phone up.
Oh, you actually bought something like this with more to it. Like a little generic phone stand. So that's the thing. So you managed to create an Instagram empire without a phone stand or...
Literally using a candle to hold my phone up against, a couple of books to prop it up, and a cushion and an amp for years. It's only within the past maybe 6 months that I stopped using the candle and the pedals and the books.
Once you got to like 300,000 Instagram followers, you're like, you know, maybe I should splash out on a phone stand.
It's ridiculous, really. I mean, I'm kind of proud of it in one way, you know, because
I
get bombarded with questions as to what gear I use, and you know, you must have the best gear in the world. It's like, no, you don't really need it, to be quite honest.
You know what I think?
Go on.
I think that the key to your success on this platform is actually your playing.
Oh, well, thank you, man.
And not the gear.
I know I do miss the candle and the cushion. I still use the cushion, I'll be honest. I still use that. I have to. You know, yeah. No choice.
Maybe you should do a throwback series one day with the original rig. You know, bring the old rig out.
But that's the thing. No one would believe me. I used to say it at the shop at Chicago Music Exchange. Like, some of them would ask, oh, well, how do you record your videos? I'd show them a picture and they'd start laughing, ha ha ha, okay, show me the real one. Like, no, that is what I've been using.
You know? Yeah.
I've seen it
with my own eyes.
You have.
It was crazy. When I was around, that was when coronavirus like happened pretty much, right? Because...
Yeah, when were you here? Was it March?
Yeah, because I remember we went to the cinema to see 1917.
Yeah. Yeah. So whenever that came out, that's when you were here, yeah.
But it was empty.
It was just me and you, wasn't it?
Yeah, because there was like this virus.
Yeah.
So it must have literally been then.
Yeah.
Yeah. But sorry, go on.
Yeah, but I mean, at that time, obviously nothing was shut down, or, you know, we didn't know the full extent of what was going to happen or come to be, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. But I mean, all the more time for you to make music videos, which has been amazing to watch. Especially, I must shout out to my favorite clip of yours, which is the Queen. Yeah, crazy little thing.
That's
wicked. When I saw it just brought a huge smile to my face as well. All this stuff, man. Like, honestly, I just really implore everyone to go and follow. You know, follow Nathaniel on Instagram because,
like you.
I said, it's like a balanced diet of all things guitar.
A balanced diet, I like it.
Because it's all genres as well. So that's another thing, man. I mean, you would consider yourself primarily a fingerstyle player, but you've got all the chops in the other styles. Is that
I mean, I I've always loved playing the guitar and loved listening to different guitarists and even just different musicians who aren't guitarists and trying to steal from them. You know, I remember when I first started, or maybe a year or so into playing, I remember my mum saying, you got to cater for everyone's style. You know, got to try and play this style and this style. And I don't know why that stuck with me, and I don't know why she said it, because, you know, she's never played an instrument. but that kind of stuck with me. And then I love exploring different genres and styles. Now, I mean, I do get a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, you can play, you know, different styles and stuff. I mean, I think of it this way. Like, imagine being able to say a few sentences in different languages, but if the person you're chatting to goes off on another tangent, then, you know, I'd be repeating the same thing. You know, could be talking about shopping, I could be talking about a train or something, you know?
So that's an interesting point, because... You know, hearing you.
You know
just
what I mean,
of,
though, right?
Well, I know what you mean, but I it appears from the outside and from just, you know, hanging with you for a bit in Chicago that, you know, you are much more fluent in these other languages, you say, than you let on. But I completely relate to how I completely relate to how you feel about that. Yeah. You know, so the tour I was just on when we met was the International Guitar Night tour, and that was with Cenk Erdoğan from Istanbul and Olli Soikkeli from Finland. And yeah. Olli is just a absolutely phenomenal, one of the best in the world. This kind of jazz, gypsy jazz, kind of all things shred guy. And he's completely fluent in that language. But then, you know, I see you upload clips like you did the other day on the Archtop that you were playing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it looks to me that you're speaking the same language. And I think there's a voice in people's heads when they consume these short clips, which are, say, riffs rather than full songs, which, you know, they might tell themselves, oh, yeah, but I bet he's just doing... But he's just rehearsed 30 seconds of music and then that's the end of it. But I do genuinely feel that you are more fluent in those languages than you say. Or do you literally feel that is that your process that you will just think, you know, this week I want to upload a country clip, so I'm just gonna, you know, start from zero and build up this one awesome section and then upload that? Like, how does that work?
I mean, it's a bit of both, really. Like, I've always wanted to be, you know, fluent in lots of styles, or, you know, at least attempt to do it. But I just love trying to play different, you know, genres and styles. I mean, it's basically, if I like the sound of something I don't know how to play it, you know, I want to try and learn it and try and incorporate it into my playing. But yeah, I mean, I'll go through like phases. Like, at the moment, I'm kind of on a gypsy jazz kind of thing. I just love it. I mean, I remember hearing a lot of it when I was about 16 or 17, Borelli Le Grand, and again, here's my Northern accent pronouncing, you know, French gypsy jazz guitarist, Borelli Le Grand and Stachelo Rosenberg, or Stachelo Rosenberg, you know who I mean. I remember hearing them and being blown away, so I've always had that kind of thing in the back of mind where I'd love to do more gypsy jazz. But at the moment, it's a lot of Angelo Dabar. Is his name. Absolutely outrageous gypsy jazz. But then next week I'll be on to a Brent Mason kind of country guitar thing. And then the week after that it'll be, you know, some fingerstyle stuff. It's kind of helped me out because I've got to dabble, you know, take bits from here and there of these styles. But yeah, I would never consider myself a master of all these styles. Far from it. You know,
well, elaborating on that a little bit. So, you know, you have the one record, which is a fingerstyle album. Have you ever thought about, you know, do you have repertoire that is, you know, several full pieces in all these different styles, or is it just sort of licks and learning the language still at this point?
I do have like riffs and kind of song ideas prepared. I haven't got around to recording them, but for the most part, it would be the latter. I think, you know, like, bits that I've learned and I've pieced together and that I want to include, you know, for videos, maybe riffs or something like that, or little solos here and there, you know?
Yeah, it would be awesome to hear, you know, a diverse discography of your styles in the future in these different genres, just to completely confuse people at the merch table at shows, you know?
Well, that's I mean, no one would listen to it. Like, you get someone who'd be into it for one song. Yeah, I like this song, but the rest I don't like because I'm not into that. And then someone else would be like, oh, well, I like this one, but the rest is crap.
Tour the world doing guitar clinics, you know, and just keep it going in different scenes and different styles. It's really, you know, I really meant what I said earlier on when, you know, I see a lot of people playing in different styles, but you really seem to be like nailing it. And there's another player called Josh Meader Josh Meader I've been following. I think he's in Australia.
He's Australian. He's about 15 by the looks of it. What? And he's just... No, he's a bit older, obviously, but he's young.
Yeah.
But he is astonishing how good he is, right?
There's a bunch of crazy guitar players coming out of Australia. Like, absolutely insane Australian guitar players. Obviously, there's, you know, Pliny, who's got a new album out, probably out now by the time this comes out. And Stephen
I know the one you mean, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Who's just an absolute freak in the nicest way. Never met the guy.
Yeah.
Just incredible guitar player. But it's really interesting that you've found this this niche, or appears to be a niche, or it's a growing thing, I'm sure, on Instagram, doing these portrait, very organic looking home style, I just woke up like this, hashtag no makeup kind of videos. Do you see this being where music consumption's going? Like, do you see albums, you know, from your point of view and the success that you've had on that platform, do you see albums having the same worth in the traditional format versus just a regular, you know, riff based system of pieces?
I don't know, to be honest. I mean, obviously it's always changing and evolving, but what do you mean, music to be kind of more just on social media? Or?
Well, I feel like a lot of people may be listening to this, and certainly myself and my own mind in 2020 not being able to tour, you start asking yourself, well, how do I get my material out there and how do I get my material seen? And it seems to be that there is this new opportunity to just, you know, draw people into your musical world through tiny, tiny clips rather than full songs. When back when I, you know, started putting stuff on YouTube in like 2012 with Candy Rat, it was very much still, you know, this is a 3.5 minute song music video, and those things would kind of get shared around and go viral, and the algorithms were very favorable for that kind of thing. Whereas now it seems, you know, all the tech platforms seem to really favor these high engagement short clips, which really, really favor, you know, people with your skill set, which is, you know, diverse skills, multiple genres, bish, bash, bosh, quick, very, very awesome things. But I feel like it's very hard to encourage someone to spend 10 times as many hours doing a full piece and then upload that and have it kind of sink like a dead duck, you know? I'm really curious talking to people like you who have that kind of regular output, because, you know, you can have a regular output when you're not spending the time writing a 4 minute tune, you know? And I'm just really curious as to how you think about the future of you and your output and the decisions you'll make according to the feedback you've had on what you've done. If that makes sense. Well, I mean, sorry to ramble.
No, I kind of know what you mean. I mean, it's unfair, really, with what you mentioned there. Like, someone's gone to the trouble of doing like a full 4 minute video, you know, putting so much effort and time into it, and then, you know, like you said, it sinks like a stone. It's such a shame for that to happen, and I'm sure it does. You know, it's, you know, I've kind of recorded videos that I've spent an incredible amount of time learning, and, you know, doesn't go anywhere, doesn't do anything. And in terms of like kind of to get your music out there, I think Instagram is a huge thing, and social media in general. But how will it filter out from the rest of the stuff that's out there? That's, for me, is the tricky thing, and I don't really have an answer for that.
Well, hello there, everyone. Apologies for the interruption to the podcast, but I did want to tell you about the amazing Tonewood amp, the awesome sponsors of the show. Many of you will know already that I use this thing all the time, the magical little device that sticks with magnets to the back of your acoustic guitar, vibrates the back surface of the instrument so that reverb, delay, chorus, Leslie speaker effects, and other loveliness project out of the sound hole as if by magic. You can head to mikedawshasapodcast.com now to get more information about the Tonewood amp, as well as saving a tasty percentage for yourself. Let's get right back to it. So you found this success on Instagram, but it sounds like you're still uncertain as to how to take that and take it further into the world.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, well, how I started out on Instagram, I mean, I suppose I'll start from there. Like, I'd be out busking on the street.
With the street cube.
With the street cube, you know it. Oh, yeah. So I'd hop on the train, I'd go downtown, I'd go busking, and I remember there was one particular day, there was a guy filming me. I mean, obviously you get people filming from time to time, but yeah, he was filming me, and I got chatting with him, and I had like a, you know, like a business card. It just said Nathaniel Murphy, guitarist, email and number on it. And anyway, I started getting emails of people saying, oh, I love your videos on Instagram. And I'm thinking, well, hang on, I'm not on Instagram, you know, so what's going on here? Because at the time, this was kind of early days for Instagram, I assume. Mm. And at that time, it was very naive of me, because I thought it was just like, you know, pictures of food or selfies or, you know, just touristy kind of stuff. And I wasn't, you know, it wasn't really for me. But I went on and, you know, I found a few videos of myself on there that people have put up. nothing huge or anything. And I thought, you know, well, I'll post some videos of myself playing and, you know, see what happens. And, you know, the feedback started to get good and they started to snowball. And over time, I started to do more and more. Now, as to where I can take it, I'm not too sure, to be honest, because my whole attitude is, I'm trying to think of it as a business card, so to speak, my Instagram profile. Not to like make money or anything, because let me tell everyone who's listening to this, I don't make a single penny off Instagram, you know?
Okay, so I gotta stop you there, because that is incredibly surprising.
No, I'm not winding you up. I do not make a single penny off the videos that I make on Instagram or the views. Not people, again, people might think I'm lying. Trust me, I'm not. I mean, I've had opportunities to, you know, Fender have reached out to me, and Gibson and stuff like that, and Taylor, you know, so I've been very lucky in that sense. So I might get the odd guitar here and there, you know, for free, or, you know, to do a video with and then send it back. But in terms of, like, actually paying the bills, you know, it doesn't help towards that. And it wouldn't be all about the money anyway, because, I mean, back to what I was going to say is I've always wanted it to be like a business card to where I'd love to do like session work, you know, and be someone's sideman traveling around the world. You know, I've said that before. I would absolutely love to do that. You know, to travel the world playing the guitar to audiences, you know, that would be the dream for me, you know, and, you know, hopefully it might work out one day, you know.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you've probably got the greatest business card out there right now in terms of the diversity of your output and, you know, your lovable character, which you are so have revealed during this session here. But that's really interesting. And, you know, it seems that you've got totally the right approach, which is, you know, get as much stuff out there of consistently high quality. And from my experience, that does work in getting those kind of gigs. Obviously, one person's anecdotal experience doesn't really help, and it shouldn't be taken as gospel. But you know, I've been as well as the solo stuff, working with the frontman of the Moody Blues since you know 2013, and that actually didn't come from a video. It came from a shit gig, believe it or not. Actually, but
I think you told me about this before. It's incredible, though.
Yeah, I don't know if I've mentioned this story on any of these episodes yet, but basically what happened is I played the worst gig of my life, and one of the other acts on that bill 4 years later recommended me to Justin Hayward. However, when the organization were able to look at the metrics and say, okay, well, this guy has a bit of a following by himself, those things totally help in getting those kind of gigs. So it would be really interesting for people to understand that, like, using social media as a business card rather than trying to monetize it as its own thing. It's the residual opportunities that turn it into a business and turn it into a sustainable thing. And you know, touring, you know, personally, touring has been the number one source of income by far, which is why 2020 is so kind of crazy. But, you know, I think what will happen in the future, and you'll probably end up kicking yourself, is that there will be a way for people to directly monetize viral Instagram videos, because on every other platform that has happened, it's just taken time. Like, I think I did a video of One by Metallica and it went viral on Facebook. But it was only a year later that they started counting those kind of views as UK chart metrics.
Oh, wow.
So, and I did the math, and it turns out that would have been a top 10 single in the UK.
Jesus.
But it's nothing, because it was a year earlier than they introduced that system. So, you know, and it's the same with adverts. I mean, advertising on videos on Facebook is only really just rolling out now, whereas this video came out in 2017, and I think in total on the uploads, it was like 100 million views, right? So 100 million views mean nothing. And I'll tell you, for anyone listening, you know, I do have tab for that arrangement, but no one bought that tab. Like, you have 100 million views, and you're advertising the tab sales, and you very quickly realize that if you're having a viral video, it's, you know, spoilers, there aren't 100 million guitar players watching it. It's mostly just general population people who think it's cool, right? Yeah. That's just the way it is. That's, you know, you can't have a viral thing within the guitar community. That's an oxymoron, you know? It doesn't really work. So what was interesting to me was that experience trying to monetize something that was massive on a platform that couldn't directly monetize itself versus having a video with, say, like 1 million views out with Guitar World magazine and then selling loads of tab because their audience is just guitar players, right? So it seems that there's going to come a point, you know, soon where the future Nathaniel Murphy might just be like, fuck, I wish I'd started now, you know.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah. I've had people ask, well, how do you monetize videos or what can you do? It's like, well, I don't know, you know. No. I genuinely don't know. I mean, do you any idea how it would get monetized? Because I don't really know.
Well, I think you're doing the right... I mean, again, I'm no expert on Instagram because my Instagram in the past, because I was always...
Well, neither am I now, by the way. Well, okay. Don't be fooled by the numbers. I just put up videos. That's literally all I do.
But this is another reason I wanted to talk to you, because I wanted people to understand the man behind the clips. And you're clearly just a humble guy who just does his thing, and it's the playing and the fact that you're a great player which is making this stuff work. So cut out all the bullshit and the which time of the day do I release my video to get maximum exposure? It's like, mate, just be sick. If you're just really sick, then it's fine. Then, you know. But God, I completely forgot what were you asking me something.
How's it going to be possible to monetize those type of videos?
So with Instagram in the past, I'd always just used it as a tour diary, you know, since day one when it was released as an app. It was just an open diary, so my Instagram's just pictures of me backstage with my mates just doing stupid stuff. So I definitely don't have a lot of guitar content, which is really, really silly in hindsight. But I think what you're doing in terms of, you know, gaining massive exposure for yourself and your, what you can do is absolutely the right thing to do, you know, because it is a portfolio. It's a digital portfolio. You know, I hate to say it, but maybe if it was called like Nathaniel Murphy instead of, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sorry. But
I've contemplated doing that. So many times, but you've got to
own it, you know. So it's so for example, there was one player who I spoke to recently, very well known guitar player, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna interview Nathaniel Murphy, and they were like, I know the name, but I can't place it. And I said, oh, he's Zeppelin thingy, and it was like, oh, that guy's sick, you know. So There's something there which is gonna have to be navigated at some point.
I've thought about that so often, because it's like you said that we've had to explain what that name means, where it came from, how to actually say the name, what my real name is. So there's a lot to it. I know exactly.
But at the same time, your name is not. Your name doesn't matter. If someone wants to hire that guy, they're going to reach out to that guy and they're going to know where to find him. So it doesn't actually, for what your goals are, I don't think it actually matters that much. Because if someone, you know, someone, say Ariana Grande needs a new guitar player or something, they're like, oh yeah, let's get that guy on Instagram. Very easy to find you, very easy to DM you. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think almost just keeping you to Instagram like that is actually really good, because then you become known for it. You become the Instagram guy, which gets you that ease of access to people. You know, people will know where to find you.
That's what I've tried to focus on, like just focusing on the Instagram thing, because I get a lot of people asking, oh, do you do the full YouTube videos? And not really.
You do have a YouTube channel, though.
I do, but I don't post very often on it. I mean, I've got a decent number of subscribers. I mean, if you were to type my name in on YouTube, a lot of videos come up from Chicago Music Exchange, from a lot of the demo videos that I do there, you know. I should really start doing more kind of full-length YouTube videos. People would like it. I'd like to do it, so it's a matter of time. I don't have the equipment. This is it. I've got a cushion and a lamp. I ain't got a camera. I ain't got a light. I've got a candle, for God's sake.
Sony and Rode and Sennheiser, send Nathaniel loads of stuff and get this man a setup. Wouldn't that be amazing if you got like 10 grand's worth of gear and suddenly your views fell off a cliff?
imagine, you know. That would happen to me, though. That's the type of thing that would happen.
Well, then, you know, there's another beautiful thing about your videos, which is that it's clearly, clearly just a guy playing guitar. And there's no bullshit. There's no, you know, post-processing or anything like that. You know, you can hear the ambience in your room and you can hear your fingers and, you know, it's a beautiful thing. So I do feel like there is a lot to be said for unpolished product, you know, really resonating with people. I have multiple videos of a John Mayer cover I do called Slow Dancing in a Burning Room. And by far the most successful ones are the shitty live ones. And yeah. It's the same with the Gautier thing that you mentioned earlier. Like, the biggest video for that is just some crappy live bootleg that I despise. It's like my most popular video on YouTube. It's not. It's on some music venue school's channel. It's not even on my channel.
The cathedral, right?
Yeah, it's literally down the road. So you know the movie Hot Fuzz.
Yeah.
So that's where they filmed Hot Fuzz in Wales, which is just basically down the street from my parents. So that gig, it's a beautiful venue as part of a private school there. It's, if you've seen the movie Hot Fuzz, you can imagine countryside private school, right? So I played there because, you know, well, it's a great venue, but it's tied in with the community. So they had this concert of their students, like, you know, their end of year student showcase. And they asked me to come in and, like, quote unquote, headline it, you know, and it was really sweet and really fun. And then, and I'm like, okay, you know, it's, this will be a really fun little gig, but didn't really think anything else of it. And then they sent me this live bootleg and said, do you want to upload this on your channel? And I said, no, it's shit. Do what you want with it, but I hate it. And then it's gone like kind of crazy. And you know, it's the same with, I released a live album recently and one of the videos from that is taken off and that's my least favorite one, you know. Maybe
it's typical, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe I'm just a really, really poor judge of what's good and what's not. I shouldn't say that because I'm singing your praises throughout this whole thing.
I'm just gonna say, yeah, you've killed me there, haven't you?
Yeah.
No, I know what you mean though. I know what you mean.
It's I don't know. I just think the whole thing is really cool. But we should also talk about Chicago Music Exchange.
Yeah.
As well, because this is for people who don't know, is it the biggest music store in America?
I don't know if it's the biggest.
Like independent, you know.
It must be, yeah, the biggest independent. I assume so. But it's absolutely incredible. Like, just the array of guitars that they've got, the quality of them, the acoustics, the electrics, is the boutique builders as well. They've got a Les Paul wall, which is probably, I don't even know how wide it is. It's incredible. But yeah, I am in a very fortunate position to do a lot of demo videos with them. You know, so I'm very fortunate to have done that. And how that came about was I'd go in from time to time. You know, I'd play a few of the guitars and I got to know one of the guys in the acoustic room, Carl Neurauer is his name. And we got friendly and he said, look, would you like to do some demo videos with us? You know, and I was like, yeah, of course, you know, I'd be honoured. And I started doing a few and then I got to chat with the owner, Andrew Yonke, and he wanted me to do them a little bit more often, you know, so maybe a couple of times a week. And yeah, I'm very gracious and very humbled to do videos for what I consider to be probably the best guitar shop out there that I've been to. Certainly that I've been to, you know.
It really is something special because you were very gracious to give me a little tour of it when I came over to Chicago. And it really is amazing. It's pretty big. It's pretty damn big. And did I meet Carl there in the acoustic room?
You did, yeah.
Yes. Yep. I think actually that was when I got an edit in for a music video and I had to see it and then we got to watch it on the thing. Yeah. Yeah. Man, so many memories. And Cenk was there as well.
This
story is amazing. In fact, another story about Chicago Music Exchange, on a previous tour with Justin Hayward, midway through the tour, he decided to add a song of his called Blue Guitar. And he plays electric on it. And then he suddenly decided that I need a 12 string and I have to play a 12 string to accompany him for the show tomorrow. And we had a day off in Chicago. So he was just like to Chris, to T-Rope, our guitar tech, just like, here's the credit card, go to Chicago Music Exchange and get Mike a 12 string. So we just rocked up and we managed to find a beautiful, I think it was a pre-owned Guild. No, maybe it wasn't. Okay. Maybe it wasn't a guild. Honestly, I can't remember. No, I think it was a guild. You know, this big old beast. So, and yeah, the staff there were really, really, you know, accommodating. But this place is incredible. There's a place in the UK down in a town called Farnham that I used to work at, actually, called Guitar Village. Have you heard of Guitar Village?
I'm not sure I have.
I believe that's the UK's equivalent of Chicago Music Exchange. You know, it's the biggest, you know, guitar-specific store, actually, in the country. It's pretty close to Guildford, where Anderton's is, but they just deal in guitars, and it's beautiful. I got many guitars over the years from there. So shout out to the people at Guitar Village. But so this Chicago Music Exchange connection would explain why you are constantly playing multiple different guitars, and your flat is a finite size, yet you appear to have like 100 guitars.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, you've been to my place. It's a small flat. I live in a small place. But
great
acoustics.
A lot of people,
great acoustics, exactly. I'm lucky that they let me borrow a lot of the guitars, you know, for a couple of reasons. I mean, one, just to get familiar with the guitar, so when I go in maybe the next day and do an actual demo video of it, I kind of know the ins and outs of the guitar to an extent, instead of just going in there cold. Also, just, you know, I get to use them on my own channel, which is really cool, because there's guitars that I'll never be able to afford that I get to play. And, you know, I'm very lucky to be able to do that. I mean, I've had some incredible guitars from there that I've been able to play.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I've got to meet a lot of great people there. And a lot of people have seen my videos with them. For example, Rick Nielsen of Cheap Trick.
I saw that. Yesterday, I think I saw something uploaded about that onto YouTube, I think.
Yeah, just at the drop of a hat, I thought, you know, I'll just put that video on there. Because someone else took that video and put it on their YouTube page, and it's like 500,000 views. And I was like, oh, well, maybe I should.
God, dude.
You see?
Dude, I feel the pain.
I feel the pain.
With credit? Did you get credit, at least?
Yeah, put my name on it. Yeah. But,
yeah.
I don't know.
That helps so much. It helps so much.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, so I mean, I remember I was doing a live Instagram video, which never happens. I think I've done like 4 or 5 ever, because I don't know, I've never really got into it. And I remember I was playing and Rick Nielsen's name popped up at the bottom, and he was talking, oh, hey, love you playing, want to get in contact or something. I was like,
oh wow,
is this really him? You know, I thought it was a wind up, to be quite honest.
Dude, you are so damn humble. You are so damn, you're either super humble or just like really
suspicious.
Or just like really dumb, you know? Like, just think everything's not real.
Probably dumb, to be honest. But yeah, he reached out. He got my number from the guys at the shop. And he said, oh, you know, because I'd like you to see some of the guitars that I've got, you know, take someone with you and play them. And I couldn't believe it. You know, it's Rick Nielsen of Cheap Trick. He's not too far away, it's like an hour and a half in Rockford. But yeah, he was very gracious to let me borrow some of his guitars, and some of the guitars he's got is, he's known as a collector anyway, but he's got like a 51 Tele, which I'm not even sure if it's technically called a Tele. It'd probably be a Nocaster or Broadcaster, I don't know what it's called. Well, it's the best Tele I'll probably ever play.
Oh yeah. Better than the crazy one when I was around that had no, it was like half a telly. It was like so sliced.
One.
Yeah.
The shop got a lot of heat for that guitar. Some people loved it. It was a 70s telly. So it was actually fine. It just looked weird because someone had taken a chunk out of it. But the neck was great, sounded great, pickups were great, you know. But yeah, that 51 Tele was incredible, and he's got a black Gibson EMS 1235 double neck.
That's the one I saw, yeah.
That's the one. So there's only, I think, 2 of them ever made, I believe, in black. And it's unbelievable.
So these are two 6-string necks, but one of them is half the length or something.
Half the length. So it's tuned a full octave up. So it's actually really cool. You can get some great ideas out of when you know, you can either try and play both at the same time, which I've done, or you can kind of switch back and forth. But it's a great guitar. But yeah, just very thankful to Rick Nielsen as well as Chicago Music Exchange for letting me play their guitars.
Shout out to Rick Nielsen and Chicago Music Exchange. And yes. Speaking of people, you know, seeing your stuff, I noticed the other day that Tommy Lee was sharing your stuff out of nowhere.
Couldn't believe it. Madness, that, isn't it? Yeah, I was over the moon at that. Because I didn't know. Someone sent me his stories on Instagram. I was like, what's this? I go on it, it's Tommy Lee. But of course, didn't put my name in. Didn't, you know, say,
yeah,
hey, this is...
Yeah,
But
yeah, wasn't it? Because I saw it on his story. Because I just follow him on Instagram and I just happened to see his story. But it wasn't a shared post. It was just a re-upload with no link click through kind of thing.
Yeah, there's
right?
I think it looked like it was, you know, when you can screen record on your phone and maybe minimize
yeah.
it because it was very close into my face. There was barely any guitar.
So he went out of his way to like hide your identity.
Yeah,
it was like,
yeah.
Look, it's my son.
Cheers, Tommy.
No, well, I know Tommy Lee he's done a lot of sharing of John Gom stuff in the past as well. So he's definitely like aware of the genre and the scene and probably digs it. I never crossed paths with him, but yeah, shout out to Tommy Lee for sharing Nathaniel's video. Just you know,
Thank you. Little
at tag goes a long way.
Bro, didn't I remember seeing a while back? Didn't James Hetfield share the link of your one cover?
Supposedly, yeah. So that particular cover, like everyone was sharing it in the metal world, it's a metal thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I started that arrangement like 12 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like it's the same with the Van Halen Jump thing that I did recently. Like they were all started like a really long time ago, and then you get to a point and you're just like, no, I'm never gonna, I don't have the chops. This is... Yeah, and then you just press pause on it and then revisit it, you know, many years later.
It's strange that because I started working on an arrangement yesterday of Fleetwood Mac's Everywhere.
Oh, nice.
Trying to incorporate it with two necks, though. And the doubts creep in at certain points, and I'm sure you'll agree where...
Oh, dude, yeah.
It's like, you know, there's a lot missing here. I mean, am I just going to try and arrange 60% of the song just for the sake of it and miss out this part and this part? And it's like, and I'm sure you'll agree, I personally don't like to miss parts out of the song, you know. That's just me personally. But, I mean, you'll be sat at home trying to figure it out and it's like, oh, I'm not too sure about this. Maybe put it away, revisit it again, you know?
That's exactly what happened with the Metallica thing, because you get to the end and you've got to do the chugging and, like, there's no way to do that without looping it if you're going to play the solo. But, you know, it is tricky, but you're in a situation where you don't need to worry about that. If your medium is a 30-second clip, you can just pick a clip that does work from a song. But, of course, if you want to, you know, like on the album, there's a great arrangement of Come As You Are, which I absolutely love, by the way.
Oh,
you know, it's
you.
Super tasteful, and there's another Fleetwood Mac one on there as well. As
I did Little Lies.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, and those are, of course, full songs. And, you know, this is something that people ask a lot at workshops and lessons and things. It's how do you choose songs to arrange? And it is a really hard thing because...
Yeah.
And I guess there's one metric to gauge it by is how much do you care about doing... the full thing, because like the Van Halen thing that I did recently, I spent like 2 days just on the solos, right?
Yeah,
because it's really hard. But
it was incredible, by the way.
Oh, thanks. Oh, yeah. I was really nervous about releasing that, but that's a different story. But if I'd have released that onto YouTube and wherever, you know, I'm taking that as an example because it's recent, not because that was done to like. Blow up or anything.
But
how much would it have actually made a difference to a listener if the solo was in there or not? You know, would it be 5% of the people would have been put off by it, or would it have ruined the whole flow of the piece? Would it have not translated live? I mean, Eric Roche's version, which it's very inspired by, doesn't really contain the solo at all. It's just a rockin' version. And I see a lot of music online, like fingerstyle covers, where someone will attempt a crazy section like that, and myself included, 100%. And it just doesn't really work, but they've made the effort to do it. And I'm looking at it like, this doesn't sound good. Why did you do that? And they're putting themselves under pressure to do it because they feel obliged to. So there's there's an internal debate everyone has to have with themselves about that. You know, when you say the Gautier song, I mean, very fortunately, that's a 3-chord song in the key of D minor. I mean, it's pretty hard not to you know, mess that up.
Well, let's not diminish your arrangement of it. It is incredible.
What I'm saying is, like, harmonically, it's very straightforward to arrange in the tuning that it was in, whereas the Van Halen song, it modulates in the solo.
Oh, yeah, it's madness.
So it's absolute madness, exactly. And there's some songs I've done that haven't been released before. I did an arrangement of This Love by Maroon 5 years ago that never saw the light of day, just because, it was all done. And I recorded it in the studio, but then I listened back and was like, you know what? There's just one thing in there that just isn't quite right. And then I went away on tour, and then over the years I forgot how to play it, and it's probably lost in the ether, you know, this recording. But it is an interesting thing, and I do kind of envy people like you who can technically just not worry about those bits, you know, if you're using Instagram as the medium.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you say, when people ask you how do you arrange songs, or where do you get the idea to arrange this certain song instead of this certain song, and it can be as simple as just being in the car one day and whatever comes on Spotify and you hear the different parts of the song and you think, oh shit, you know, that could be an idea. That hence the Fleetwood Mac Everywhere with the intro.
You get the spark from a riff, and then you have to like research the song by listening to it and try and imagine how you're going to approach it, and then you tackle it, and then you work with the tunings and things like that.
Exactly. Because, I mean, after, like, that Queen, the crazy little thing called Love arrangement that I'd done, for a long time I was thinking, well, is there another similar song? I don't want to do something, you know, exactly the same, but something in that same kind of vein where there's a good bass line going on with the same time as the vocals and, you know, there's little cool parts. And it was either stuff that has, you know, already been done. Like, for example, like all I could keep thinking about was Lady Madonna, the Beatles. But I think Tommy Emmanuel does that, and you know, if he's done it, I'm not touching it.
Tommy has kind of made some songs just uncoverable.
Yeah, just walk away, man. Just admire his and walk away. But I found myself doing that, like trying to research great bass lines with vocals at the same time, and it's like, you know, you just give up. Sometimes if you're trying to look for it, it'll never come. Whereas there's times where, like I said, you could just be in the car listening to the radio and it'll come. Like I did an arrangement, it wasn't the greatest arrangement, but of Happy by Pharrell Williams. Mm. And for some reason I thought, you know, that'd be cool to do it with a slide guitar, you know, make it a little bit more bluesy. And then you got the chords with that underlying bass line. Dun, 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 you know. So little things like that, you can get just a little bit of inspiration from anywhere, to be quite honest, you know. Yeah. And then, like, I did a little bit of Led Zeppelin's Ramble On, just a quick little thing, because I wanted to try and do the chords and the bass. It was just for fun, really. I didn't actually put in the vocals, because this is the thing where I tried putting in the vocals, and it just didn't work. It didn't sound good, you know. Because I don't know if you're too familiar with the song, the vocals is just one note pretty much the whole, well, for the intro. Leaves are falling all around, dun, 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 dun. You know, there's not much going on there.
Yeah.
And trying to do that with a guitar and a bass line, it was like, oh, you know.
It's the same the same reason I very rarely tackle like songs with like rapping in. Because the vocal just doesn't really work. There's a deep cut of me in 2013 on the Helsinki subway with my buddy Petteri Sariola doing a freestyle version of the song Freestyler by Bombfunk MCs. And I'm rapping on it as a joke, right? Because it's like you're clearly not gonna put that into the thing, but you know, doing the drum and bass guitar thing. But but that's another thing, is that, you know, how do you know which song to arrange? The top line is so important in that. And 100%. It was really interesting to hear you say that you chose to leave out the vocal element rather than trying to shoehorn it in to create an effective arrangement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just didn't work.
Yeah. I'm midway through an arrangement now that its genesis came from, like you say, just happened to hear it and a spark went off. It was Enjoy the Silence, Depeche Mode. My dad was around when I moved in. I had just moved into this house and my dad was helping me put up these panels in this room here, and as we were doing that, he, you know, I'm just like, hey, what music do you want to listen to? And he just asked for that song, and I heard it. It's very led by this kind of melody of bum 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 bum, this thing. And I thought, wouldn't that be cool to do with banjo tuners? You know, kind of keep that going. And but I want to take that arrangement and turn it into, instead of a sort of dun 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 dun, which it kind of is, what if we just turn it into like a Nine Inch Nails kind of big distortions and doom and space and reverb and octave and grit and dirt and filth and make it just a goth thing. Yeah. And I got this evil looking guitar behind me here. And I've got a few sections down. It's going to turn into something quite cool, but I can't put a schedule on it. But that came from literally not looking for a song to cover, just hearing something and thinking, oh, I can imagine that being played by the top line, this being played by, you know, a tapping thing here, and let's leave that percussion out, because there's a lot of percussion overkill right now, and I'm kind of veering away from that. I don't know about yourself, your Preston Reed style isn't super percussion heavy, so I don't consider you too much of a percussive player, but
yeah, that's probably as far as I got in terms of the percussion. I mean, I'd like to do more of it, but yeah, there's a lot of it out there, isn't there?
Yeah, I feel like now the scene has progressed to the point where, you know, you start with these kind of Wyndham Hill guys and you know, sort of melody and texture based stuff, and then it progresses into this kind of, okay, well, let's take things a little bit further, and you get to the Annie McKee school, and then things get progressed a little bit further, and now we're at a stage where we've pretty much eked out every 32nd note in a bar that you can, you know, in a piece of music. So it will be really interesting to see what happens next, and whether, you know, and talking to Khaki King, for example, doing another episode of this podcast here, and her music is so transcendent and ethereal and all about vibe, and talking to Fink as well, another musician who I spoke to, amazing singer-songwriter, that's their thing, is it's all vibe and ambience and atmosphere and texture, and they're the songs that are getting synced on, you know, a WhatsApp commercial or an episode of House or an episode of CSI or Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul or whatever. It's not overkill on the playing side. And I'm wondering if the whole scene goes that way as, you know, the post-corona world takes maybe some of the touring away, who knows, you know, maybe the sync and the listenable side of fingerstyle will emerge in the end. It's really interesting. It's at this point. But then, you know, who could have foreseen this as a genre, even like 15 years ago, as a viable genre to make a living from? It's crazy.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's great, though.
It's amazing.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, speaking of, you know, this genre and where it's going to go, and, you know, whatever happens after COVID-19, do you have any plans to get out there and tour and do the Nathaniel Murphy show and things like that? Is this something that you're actively thinking about, or is it still a case of building the business card?
It's definitely something I think about. It's the fear of it as well, in the sense, I don't know where to start or how to get started. Do you know what I mean? I mean, is it a case of where I just try and go to places local around here, you know, just play a gig and then put it on my Instagram story, hey, I'm playing a gig at this place at this time. Is that the best way to go about it? Or do I reach out to other like-minded players and say, how do I get started? You know, I genuinely think about it, and I genuinely don't know how to start or where to start. I mean, what would your advice be, for example?
How old are you?
I'm 33, so I'm getting on a bit.
Okay, I'm 31, so which means I'm in no position to give anyone advice who is 33. No, honestly, like I'm an idiot, so you know that anyway. But I mean, honestly, you have so much to offer any kind of package tour, because your an image of your Instagram look that everyone recognizes will make people buy tickets. The name Nathaniel Murphy right now obviously has value, but I feel like the visual image of, oh, it's that guy, I've seen his videos on Tommy Lee's story, has a thing. So if I was in your position, I'd probably just pitch to some booking agents and have a discussion and think, you know, maybe, you know, they can put you on a tour as Zeppelin, doors. You know, as Zeppelin yeah. bar not blah blah, blah with an image on the poster. Because think about Dwayne the Rock Johnson, right? So he jumped from WWE or WWF at the time I'm no wrestling fanatic. I just know The Rock, right? So he came to movies as The Rock, and then he became Dwayne the Rock Johnson, and now he's kind of Dwayne Johnson. Well, yeah, exactly. But more to the point, he knew that people didn't know Dwayne Johnson as much as they knew The Rock as a brand, right?
Exactly.
I mean, something like International Guitar Night, which as I said, the tour that I came through your town on, you know, you'd be perfect for something like that, but you're in America, so it might not work. However, you are from Ireland, so it would work. So International Guitar Night, they say there's no American players, or there's one American player on the roster and the rest have to be international, right? But yeah, like if you were to hit them up, and I'm more than happy to, you know, connect you guys, and you know, if you're billed as Zeppelin banarara brackets Nathaniel Murphy or something, you know, there's a intense value there. But I think it's probably a situation of presenting your Instagram brand as the act to begin with, and then shifting it if you want. But again, I'm just an idiot. Like I just float through life and say yes to some things. That's like literally how I've operated until this point. So I'm not like any kind of sage of advice.
No, it's good advice, and I'm willing to take advice from anyone. I mean, it's interesting as well, like the whole International Guitar Night. That'd be amazing. I mean, again, it's traveling around playing, because I often think and I often get asked, well, right, well, what's the next step? Are you actually going to play live anywhere? What are you going to do next? And it's like, yeah, I want to. And it's like, well, right, well, what's holding you back? And I mean, it's a couple of things. It's like the fear of it not working out. You know, little things like that.
Well, that's why support tours are so fun. You know, I would happily just do support tours for the rest of my life, really, because you don't have to deal with really any anxiety. You're, you know, in financially, you're obviously getting a much smaller check for your fee. However, if you're lucky enough to get onto a support tour with a decent sized audience, and you are really and you smash it and end up selling a lot of merchandise, that makes up for that difference. So, for example, if you're going out and headlining but only have a pull of, say, 100 people, but your fee's a bit larger, but if you get, you know, you might walk away with X, but then if you go on a support tour in front of 10,000 people, you know, you could do the support, you could do the slot for free, but you're going to be, you know, making a lot more because you're selling merchandise to a lot more people, as long as fans are still willing to support artists at the merch table. So, you know, that would be an ideal thing if you're at all anxious about the touring thing, is you have the safety net of someone else's audience, but a wonderful introduction to new fans, and you get to travel around the world in the process. But you know, it's interesting. The solo guitar scene is so different to, say, you know, touring metal bands or something like this. So many people resent touring because they just think of vans and crappy backstages and sleeping on the floor and being unwashed. And if there's no budget, but you've got like six or seven mouths to feed, I get that. But you're very fortunate because you're set up to do a one-man show, you know? So you're able to budget to do it relatively comfortably. And another thing is, the only reason I bring this up, I'm not trying to sort of trap the guy with the Instagram page and say, when are you going to tour? No. The only reason I say that is because I've seen you play, and you are legit, and you are one of the people that would do an amazing full live show. And not everyone who has viral videos is like that at all, you know? But I've seen clips of you playing with Dweezil Zappa, you know, online, and I've seen you play just in person. So I say this, and anyone listening, if you see Zeppelin blah, 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 come through town, go to the show, because it's going to be sick. And I'm sure anyone watching will agree. And that's a testament it's a testament to how you present yourself in a very organic way online. So really, yeah, it's I'm really excited to do a show together. You know, let's go on tour together. That'll be fun.
I'll, you know, happily do that.
Yeah, just bring out the Rick Nielsen guitar.
There you go. You can play it, right?
Awesome, dude. Exactly. Well, hey, I think we're pretty much good for time now. So, is there anything? Oh, you know what? Before we go, I do want to give a shout out to the Tonewood Amp guys for helping me kind of put this thing together. Do you have a Tonewood Amp, or you've used one before?
I do. I mean, I think the first time, I don't, hopefully I'm not taking up too much time, but I remember that. So the summer NAMM where I met you, that was the first time that I actually got to play one, because I'd seen it all over like Instagram. I'd seen yourself using it. I'd seen like Dylan Fowley using them, and you know, everyone was raving about them, and they sounded incredible in the videos. So I thought, you know, I'd love to check them out. And I remember, I can't remember the name of the fella there, at Tonewood Amp. You know, he'd bring people into the little sound booth room at NAMM.
Yeah.
And he was showing me how it works. And I remember you helped me out as well. I couldn't believe how good it actually sounded in person, you know. To be able to just sit on your couch at home and have the reverb and chorus and all that, it's unbelievable, you know.
Yeah, it's when you go into those sealed fart chambers at NAMM and get to actually hear it in the soundproof environment, it is something else. Yeah, super shout out to the Tonewood Amp guys.
Yes,
you know, it's really interesting. I'm super passionate about this device, and also because the guys running it are just, you know, literally husband and wife. They created this thing at home in Arizona, and it's a real testament to their success in innovating in the guitar world, to have, you know, people such as yourself who clearly know tone and know sound and know guitar to sing its praises so highly. So shout out to Helene and Ofa at Tonewood Amp. If they're listening to this while they're editing this podcast, we love you, and thanks for changing our little guitar worlds.
Well, yes, thank you.
Dude, Nathaniel Murphy, a.k.a. Zeppelin Barnards, Zeppelin Barnacles on Instagram. Go follow him. Yeah, Zeppelin Barnacles. You got to get Zeppelin Barnacles merch. There we go. You know, you can get some t-shirts going there. Follow him on Instagram and YouTube and everywhere if you haven't. It's been such an interesting insight talking to you about the world of new social media and just being a general sick human. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, man.
And next time,
thank you for having me.
Hey, pleasure, man. And next time when this lockdown, you know, craps out and we're able to travel again, I'll hit you up in next time I'm in Chicago. And if you're over, I'm in Bristol Way, just south of Manchester, like 3 hours south of Manchester. Let's have a drink or something.
Definitely.
Nathaniel Murphy, thanks so much. See you again.
Yes.
Hey guys, thanks so much for checking out this week's episode of the podcast. For more information about this week's guest, head to the link in the description, where you will also find more information about the Tonewood Amp, as well as that cheeky little discount you can get as well. Lots of love. See you next time.